Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 29, Bhakti Yoga, Text 39. Vrikshnas.
Vrikshnas.
Actually, it's Vrikna.
Vrikna.
Cha.
Me.
Su. Drida. Sneha. Pasha. Darshaha, Rishni, Andaka, Satvateshu, Prasrita, Prasarita, Shriti, Viridaye, Paya, Samaya, Hi, Atma, Subodha, Hetina. Rikshnas chame sudram. Rikshnas chame sudridas neha pasho. Dasharha vrishyandika satpateshu. Prasarita shristi. Vivridaye Tvaya Samaya Yatma Subodha Hetina. Cut off. Cha and May My Sudrida. Very firm. Sneha Pasha. Binding rope of affection. Dasharha Rishni Andaka Satpateshu. For the Dashahas, Rishnis, Andakas, and Satvatas. Prasarita. Cast. Shristi, of your creation. Vivridaye, for the increase. Tvaya, by you. Samaya, through your illusory energy. He, indeed. Atma, of the soul. Subodha, a proper knowledge. Hetina, by the sword. Translation purport by Prabhupada's disciples. The firmly binding rope of my affection for the families of the Darshahas, Vrishnis, Andakas, and Satvatas, a rope you originally cast over me by your illusory energy, for the purpose of developing your creation, is now cast off by the weapon of transcendental knowledge of the self. Please repeat. The firmly binding rope of my affection for the families of the Darshahas, Rishnis, Andakas, and Satvatas, a rope you originally cast over me by your illusory energy for the purpose of developing your creation, is now cut off by the weapon of transcendental knowledge of the self. Purport. Although the members of the families mentioned in this verse are eternal associates of Lord Krishna, and thus proper objects of affection, Sri Uddhava had regarded them as his personal relatives rather than simply as the pure devotees of the Lord. Influenced by the Lord's illusory potency, Uddhava had desired the prosperity and victory of these dynasties. But now, by hearing Lord Krishna's instructions, he has again fixed his mind exclusively upon Lord Krishna, and thus he regards the so-called family members without any mundane conception as eternal servants of the Lord. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatundeve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Pasikatyade Satarne. Queen Kunti also offered a similar prayer when Lord Krishna was leaving Hastinapura. She said, Vishvatma, Atavishvatma, Vishvamurte, Svakeshume, Svasneha Pasham, Imam Chindi, Dridam Pandishu Vrishnishu. So she addresses Krishna as Vishva Isha, the Lord of the entire universe, as well as Vishvatma, the soul of the entire universe. Vishva means universe, and Isha means the controller, and Atma means the soul of the entire universe. Vishvamurte, the universal form. And then she says that Svakeshume, so my personal Sneha Pasham, so the same words you use here, binding ropes of affection. But then she asks, Imam Chindi, may you cut off these binding ropes of affection. Dridam means very strong ropes of affection. Dridam, Pandishu, Vrishnishu, for the Pandavas and for the Vrishnis. So she's asking that her affection for these persons be cut off. And we're praying to Krishna that we can develop affection for these people. That if somehow or another we had affection for Arjuna, Bhima, Yudhisthira Maharaj, Nakula and Sahadev, as well as personalities such as Uddhava, I don't think any of our spiritual personalities would complain. But here, because the word is used for Maya, it's being translated by Uddhava as due to your illusory potency. But whether Kunti Devi or Uddhava, they're all eternally liberated persons. There is no question of them ever being influenced really by the illusory energy, although they may say like that. In Krishna's pastimes, there is affection. As a matter of fact, it is pure love, what to speak of just ordinary affection. But if they were just like all acting on the Mahabhagavata platform, that when Uddhava saw Kamsa, they immediately ran up to him and embraced him. And when Keshi and Agasura came, then all the residents of Vrindavan came out to pay them obeisances. Then it would not be very exciting, these pastimes. It would be rather confusing. The whole purpose of these pastimes, for us especially, would be rather obscure. Therefore, there has to be some idea of what these pastimes were. There has to be some manifestations in these pastimes for our benefit. But the general idea is there. It's the general principle that in the material world, even as Queen Kunti says, our problems here are due to our social interactions. Specifically, she uses the word, or it's translated as dissident. Dissension among living entities is the cause of all our problems. So why do people dissent here? Why is there problems? Why are there fighting and animosity? Even in amongst devotees, Prabhupada used to say that there is a tendency for the devotees to like to fight with each other. Because after all, it's difficult to fight with other people unless we're associated with them. Since we associate with the devotees, there's some, our natural tendency due to our conditioned nature is we like to fight. If not physically, it's not that we have every day in the temple room there's a boxing match. Or there's outside in the courtyard, you know, ding and everything. If we don't fight physically, then we usually fight psychologically, mentally, verbally. Even if we say, don't say the right thing, but sometimes even in the tone of our voice, there is a little antagonism or tendency for criticism, even if we don't verbally say it. Someone says, oh, they're a great devotee. Yeah, they're a great devotee. So even that is a slight tendency towards argument, dissension. If we read Prabhupada's conversations a lot of times, Prabhupada will say one thing, devotee will say something else, and rather than just contradict what the devotee is saying, Prabhupada sometimes even agrees with the next statement that someone makes. That Prabhupada's usually, unless there's a specific purpose, he's not really trying to create dissension or controversy when it's unnecessary. But that tendency in the material world, but why has it come about? Krishna summarizes it in a very simple way. He says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nishoshiti Nakanshiti Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Madhvaktim Labhate Param. Now when we come to the Brahma-Buddha stage, where we realize that we're not this body, that we're spiritual beings, then we no longer hanker and lament. So this is our only real problem in the material world. It's not our only problem, but in the being conditioned by material life, our main problem is we're hankering and lamenting. If we weren't hankering and lamenting, what would there be to worry about? If we were actually accepting what was going on right now, if we weren't disturbed by the past, and we weren't hankering for the future. In other words, we look around us and we think, well, things could be a lot better. Due to everyone's mistake, now we have the present circumstance. If we're looking for mistakes, we can find them. We can find them even in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like Ramachandra Puri. Ramachandra Puri, he was his disciple of Madhavendra Puri. And at the time of his passing from this world, Madhavendra Puri was lamenting that somehow or another, I couldn't obtain Krishna in Vrindavan and Mathura. So what am I supposed to do now? He was in the mood of Srimati Radharani, feeling separation from Krishna. And he was expressing those feelings of separation, the very feelings of separation we're trying to eventually one day we're hoping to aspire to obtain, the actual feelings like that. Missing Krishna. Right now we don't even believe in Krishna so much. What to speak of missing him? And even if we believed in him, we're not quite sure who he is and why he's, you know, causing all these problems in my life. So we're trying to realize that there is a Krishna, and we're trying to actually appreciate how wonderful he is, especially to his devotees. And that we're one of those persons he's actually wonderful to. So he was lamenting like that, Madhavendra Puri, and his disciple Ramachandra Puri came, heard him lamenting like that, and said, my dear spiritual master, please, you're about to leave your body, don't lament. Think of Brahman. Fix your mind to Brahman. Don't lament like this. So Madhavendra Puri did not appreciate this advice coming from his disciple, and said, get out of here immediately. If I see your face at the time of my leaving this body, I won't obtain my destination. Ramachandrapuri didn't accept the chastisement of his spiritual master. He thought his spiritual master was more or less in Maya, and he was trying to help him get out of Maya. In other words, he was a Mayavadi, although he was a disciple of a great spiritual personality. Somehow or another, by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire, he manifested this pastime. But when he was in Jagannath Puri, he came because Ramachandra Puri was a sannyasi. Even the Mayavadis are sometimes very good sannyasis. But he went from country or from town to town, so finally he wound up in Mayapur. And there his business was more or less to find fault with the devotees. And he was very good at it. He cooked a feast for Jagannanda Pandit, and he ate sumptuously, and then he fed Jagannanda Pandit and asked him to eat more and more and more. I'm already full. No, it's prasadam, you should honor prasadam. So finally he honored prasadam according to the desire of Ramachandra Puri, and Ramachandra Puri turned to him and said, aha, I've heard rumors that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disciples eat too much. But now I'm seeing this with my very eyes. I mean, perhaps he was right. But he himself was encouraging Jagannanda Pandit to eat more and more. So there, and he himself ate as sumptuously as he wanted, but somehow or another he took this as a criticism. And he criticized, he did this to all the devotees in Mayapur. Actually, I guess they were in Jagannath Puri at that time. In Jagannath Puri. Obviously, he wasn't very popular. He wasn't gaining any popularity credits with anyone. But then he decided to find fault with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he observed him day and night trying to find some fault, and he couldn't find any fault. So he came one day when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in his Gambira, and he saw some ants crawling on the ground. And he said, ah, there it is, the proof. This sannyasi at night, he's secretly eating sweets. Otherwise, why would there be ants in his room? So then he got up and said, I'm not going to associate with this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this sense gratifier. And then he left. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was quite surprised. He had heard about how Ramachandra Puri was criticizing everyone. But now he actually personally saw from his own experience the unnecessary criticism. But his reaction is that he told his servant Govinda that from now on, I'm only going to accept so many gandhas, conch shells, of prasada every day, which was like half of what he was eating before. And that you can take a little bit of whatever is left over, and that whatever you can't get, you can fill your belly, he said, by begging alms elsewhere. So that's what, this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cut his eating in half, and everyone became greatly disturbed. And even Ramachandra Puri went to him and said, I heard you cut your eating in half, but this is not the business of a sannyasi to starve himself to death. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued on accepting half the amount of food he normally would eat, prasad. Luckily one day Ramachandra Puri left and everyone was in ecstasy. It was like a heavy burden on one's head suddenly was lifted. But Prabhupada one time, one devotee came to him and said, Prabhupada, they're criticizing me. So Prabhupada said, well, they criticize even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the devotee thought that Prabhupada didn't hear him correctly, so he repeated, Prabhupada, you don't understand, I'm doing this and they're criticizing me. So Prabhupada said, well, they even criticize the Lord Chaitanya. What to speak of us? We're insignificant. So we shouldn't think, well, if there is some criticism, my whole devotional service is a failure. I might as well quit because people don't love me. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu won't accept my service. But this nature of the material world is that people criticize everyone. Doesn't matter who they are. God, as I said before, if you go, especially in India where they know about Krishna, it's not because they know about Krishna, they're necessarily very favorable towards him. They claim, for instance, that he was a criminal. His parents were criminal. That's why he was born in a prison. And that somehow or another his father escaped and he escaped with him. And then his father kidnapped a little girl because of his criminal tendencies. And things went from bad to worse as his life went on. He was in his house, some nurse came to feed him, he killed her. And that was the beginning of his criminal career. As he grew up, he started to kill all kinds of living entities, animals in the forest. He even killed a bull and a horse. He killed a calf. Everything. He was just killing everything he can get his hands on. And then, when he was old enough, he organized a band of thieves to go to steal from the neighbors. And he'd break things and steal, and he was uncontrolled. And even at the age of 8, he was so lusty, he began to run after the girls in the village. Just because he was a little strong, he was able to do many things, lift mountains, whatever. So therefore he took advantage of it. And eventually, when things got a little difficult for him, he left that village and went to Mathura and killed the king there. And then started to go out of his place of residence when he went to Dwarka and simply kidnap ladies. He couldn't find any decent lady in Dwarka, so therefore he went out and kidnapped ladies from all over the place. So his life is that of a thief, a killer, a woman hunter, a liar. He lied on the battle of Kurukshetra. He lied in many different places. But still, there's a bunch of fanatical people who are just like him. And they worship him. But these people we can't take very seriously, because we can see they wake up in the morning and they're so bewildered that they don't even know how to put on decent clothes. They wear their bed sheets and their boots. They were sleeping in it last night. And if you ask him anything, they just repeat this name of this thief and woman hunter and liar and killer. They keep on saying Hare Krishna. That's all they can say. And sometimes they go downtown and out of madness they jump up and down with a big smile, crazy smile on their face. And all they can say is Hare Krishna. So, if one wants to find fault, one can find fault even in everything that Krishna does. Prabhupada said, they criticize him for being lusty because he married 16,108 women. They're not amazed that anyone can marry so many ladies. And according to his history, live with each one of them simultaneously and support them. But they try to find something wrong with them. And Prabhupada said, well, if he's lusty, then he's unlimitedly lusty. Who can compare with Krishna in any way? If you want to see the negative side, you can see it. One of Prabhupada's godbrothers was, there was some in Japan, there was some newspaper article criticizing some of the activities of the devotees. They were doing things, some things illegally. And Prabhupada's godbrother made a very big thing about this and started to criticize Prabhupada and his movement for this bad publicity in Japan. So Prabhupada said, well, at least I have a center in Japan that they can criticize. What has this person done? What is, he doesn't have anything in Japan. Why is he criticizing? Let him first get a... If one wants to find fault, it's easy to find fault. And why do people find fault? Because generally in this material world, for our sense gratification, we're making alliances. We call them family, society, and love. But actually they're business deals. Marriage is usually just is a business contract. Even nowadays they make marriage arrangements, you know, and when we get divorced, then you only get 20% of my assets rather than the normal 50%. Is it a deal? All right, we're married. They're not expecting to remain married for too long. Therefore, they make a contract, a business contract. Because the general idea is, as long as you gratify my senses, we're in love. And as soon as you don't gratify my senses anymore, we're angry at each other. And therefore, normally we can't stay angry, we have to separate and find someone else to fall in lust with. Of course, we may give it so many names in the material world. They give it so many names, like romance or whatever it is. But also, what it is simply a arrangement that as long as my senses are gratified, we're friends. And as soon as my senses aren't gratified, then we part our ways. Friendship, love, everything is just based upon this idea. There's no question of very much tolerance. Maybe if there are some children, then we may tolerate for some reason, namely for the children. And as soon as the children grow up, we may be 60, 70 years old, 80 years old, but then we get divorced and try and find my real soulmate somewhere. So this is all business. This has nothing to do with any higher purpose, only to gratify the senses. So this is called attachment and aversion, hankering, lamentation. And on the basis of that, we have samat sarvesha bhuteshu. One who doesn't have this, they can see everyone with an equal eye, based upon Krishna consciousness. Vidya vinaya sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hastini, Shuni Chaiva Swapake Cha Pandita Samadarshana. That a learned person can see everyone, whether the humble sages by virtue of true knowledge, can see with an equal vision the learned and gentle Brahman, the cow, the dog, and the dog eater. So not that they look at the cow and they think, you know, McDonald's. How many hamburgers will this cow make? Or not that we look at the cow and think, well, I'm not eating hamburgers anymore, so this cow is useless. If I can't eat it, then what do I have to do with it? In other words, to look at the material world and how we can exploit it, and when we give up this idea of exploiting the material world, then all these things have nothing to do with me because I can't exploit it, therefore it's useless for me. So both visions, one is materialistic for my sense gratification, the other is impersonalistic, rejecting it. There is no value, I don't really care about these things anymore because they have nothing to do with my sense gratification, therefore they're useless for me. But the learned, the humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, they can see that actually in that cow body there's a soul, just like I am, and as I'm a servant of Krishna by constitution, and as Krishna has a desire to help all other living entities, then it's my position to help all living entities according to the direction that Krishna gives me. That this cow, it's not that the cow has nothing to do with my life, all the other living entities, only a few people have something to do with my existence, and I only relate to them because they're helping me. So if we look at the world as how it's good for me, and how it should be arranged for my happiness, either material or spiritual, then either we're materialists or we're impersonalists. Only the devotees can look at others and see them in relation to Krishna, and then as a servant of Krishna deal with them accordingly. So here Uddhava is certainly on that platform. It is not that he was looking at the Pandus and the Pandavas or the Vrishnis or anyone else with some idea that I'm going to exploit you. No, he was fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, how could he be the personal advisor of Krishna and Krishna's pastimes? It's not that some ordinary person in Maya is advising Krishna. But for the sake of pastimes, there has to be something like that, or else it wouldn't be very interesting. For us, at least. So some kind of arrangement is made. But even when we go to the spiritual world, it's not that there everyone is impersonal. There's an intimate relationship and a variegated relationship. Srimati Radharani seems to be competing against Chandravali. But we can't understand this competition. Competition has to be there, or else everything would be very boring. If every day or every evening Krishna appeared exactly on time to the rendezvous, it would be like, couldn't be very exciting. There has to be some opposition in the spiritual world to make things more exciting. Or else things would just get boring. Even we find in Sri Ramaraja's book, when he relates to the Aracharya's explanation, he said that in Aracharya's explanation there came a time on some level of Krishna's pastimes when all the gopis married Krishna. At least some, anyhow, it's very beyond our comprehension of how these things go on. But on some level the gopis married Krishna. But then this rendezvous in the forest didn't take place anymore. They were all married. And they just got bored with each other. Not really. But the excitement that comes about by escaping from their so-called husbands, going into the forest to meet Krishna at the dead of night, it creates a kind of enthusiasm. And that enthusiasm is what everyone relishes. Love is there inconceivably beyond our imagination for all the residents of the spiritual world. But this extra enthusiasm of parakīya rasa is beyond everyone's comprehension. It results in things like the Mahabhava and parakīya rasa. So it's on a completely different level. There's nothing like the illicity of materialistic relationships here, where people are simply escaping from their obligations to fulfill their sense gratification, because there is no material sense gratification. But they're escaping simply out of enthusiasm to please Krishna, out of complete love for Krishna, to please him without any personal consideration. And they're willing to give up all kinds of other obligations to please Krishna. So, in a culture where everyone is very much aware of their obligations towards others and their obligations towards society, to give up everything to please Krishna, this is the highest perfection that the gopis were able to achieve. Of course, everyone really has that mood in the spiritual world, but not everyone manifests itself in the same way that the gopis have. And therefore that ecstasy of that mood is able to come out fully in the activities of the gopis. So Krishna relishes it, the gopis relish it, and really all the residents of the spiritual world actually relish it. But when we transport our understanding and we try to equate what the gopis are feeling and thinking and doing with our mundane conceptions of things, then we get into trouble. And we can't really appreciate or understand what's really going on. Similarly, with the Uddhava, he may express himself as being under the illusory energy, relating in a certain way to the Pandavas and the Vrishnis, but certainly as Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about Krishnadas Kaviraj, Goswami, when he was relating in the same kind of mood of lamentation, he said that he may lament like that, but he's always our esteemed spiritual master. So we can only hope one day to come to the same respect and admiration and love and affection that Uddhava had for these Rishnis and the Pandavas, because they were all in relation to his relation to Krishna. So I'll stop there. Any questions, comments? Yes. Well, from the very beginning, they're weakened. How they, at the stage of Nishta, even they may be there, well, as you probably know, it goes from Shraddha, a little liking, then associating with the devotees. So here we're associating with the devotees, we're hearing this philosophy. So obviously, if we develop some vision, some transcendental vision, then it weakens a little bit. Even we're impelled by our senses and mind and our sentiments act a little bit, but we hesitate. We're a little reluctant because we've heard we have some vision. So that normally an animal, for instance, when he sees a tiger, sees an animal, say a buffalo, he doesn't hesitate. He has no instruction coming from his mother. You know, this is a little buffalo, or this is a mother buffalo. If you kill and eat this buffalo, the little buffalo won't have any shelter. You know, you should be a little civilized and decide, don't eat a mother buffalo. No, a tiger has no such thought or sentiment. He sees a buffalo, he eats it. There's nothing that goes through his mind. Or there's no intelligence to dissuade him from immediately trying to eat that buffalo. Human form of life, by instructions coming from civilized human beings, then there may be some hesitation. We may be reminded of some instruction. When we hear the highest instructions coming from Krishna, then those instructions, that intelligence, immediately changes our vision of things as soon as we hear them. And as much as we accept them, as much as we understand them and accept them, then it changes our vision. And therefore, even if the sentiments arise within our mind, still if we have the vision, we're not so much attached to it. So at a certain stage of realization, anartha nivritti, then the vision, we're fixed in that vision. And even sometimes the sentiment may arise, but it doesn't dissuade us from acting properly. And at the stage of ruchi, then our feelings towards others are transformed into taste. So when we see our family members, whatever else, previously we had some mundane feelings towards, we still have feelings towards them, but they're spiritual feelings. They create happiness or pleasure. The feelings are all transcendental or spiritual. Just like Gaurakishore, and then they further evolve and intensify. Just like it is said that Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Gorkhashor Das Babaji. He would sometimes be eating, and the puppies would come, and he'd let them eat off his plate. So his servant would try to dissuade these puppies from eating off his plate, and Gorkhashor Das Babaji would get very angry that these are residents of the Dham. How can you restrict them like that from eating prasad? So we shouldn't imitate him. But for him, they were residents of the Dham. He had a completely different feelings and emotions. For us, they're dirty little dogs. For him, they were residents of the Dham. Or when sometimes these boys would throw rocks at him, that he would just see them as cowherd boys in Krishna's pastimes. We can't imitate that. But his feelings was others was different from what we normally have feelings towards, because they were transformed. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his feeling towards his family members was certainly different. He said, I was in my house and the Charanamrita turned into the river Ganges, and my whole house became Vaikuntha. He sings in one song. But we can't imitate that. But that's the vision that comes about by purification and absorption in Krishna consciousness. But all we can do is follow the process, and gradually our emotions, as our intelligence develops in Krishna consciousness, so our emotions will transform from material to spiritual. It's not that they disappear. Just like in the case, we think that the brahmachari goes home after not seeing his parents for the first time, he's dressed in his saffron cloth, parents see him for the first time, his mother runs up to hug him, to kiss him, he says, wait, stop! I don't touch women. And his mother goes, oh, what happened to my boy? What did they do to him? So we have to sometimes be conscious of the fact that people have emotions, and that although emotions may be mundane because of their lack of understanding, but not that we should think that ultimately our emotions, we're trying to destroy them, get rid of them, and then we'll be Krishna conscious. Eventually they'll be transformed. And so if we have the proper understanding, proper attitude, we can appreciate people's emotions and deal with them accordingly, appropriately. Not think that, you know, you should give up all your emotions towards me, that, you know. No, these things are natural. But they should be done in the proper way, so at least we should have the proper attitude and emotions, even if others don't. Anything else? Yes.
I'm saying the milk industry, they say that they kill the young calves because of their poor. Today, apparently, they want to release in the media that they want to proclaim the law that they don't have to even feed the calves until they kill them.
And, after they kill them, then they feed them?
No, before they kill them. So there's like a certain amount of time before they kill them. And now the government and the milk industry want to propose the law where they want to not even feed the calves before they kill them. Because it's costing them money. How can we show people the importance of cow protection and how bad this is?
Well, Prabhupada didn't think that our main purpose was to oppose cow slaughter, although certainly it's one of the qualities of religiosity that has caused the degradation of the due to cow slaughter. The quality of either austerity or mercy depends which one you, part of the Bhagavatam you look at, is destroyed. Without religious principles, there's no question of spiritual life. But our main purpose is to teach people to eat Krishna prasadam. For us, if you become a devotee, then automatically you'll give up all these sinful activities. So we try to make people devotees. Otherwise, if we make them vegetarian, or we stop cow slaughter, they don't necessarily become devotees. and their life is not necessarily successful by doing that. But if they become devotee, automatically all the good qualities come. So we try to preach Krishna consciousness. And when it's appropriate, if the question is brought up, we can explain about, you know, how by killing cows you can't understand Krishna consciousness. It is the real problem. Besides the fact that you're going to go to, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he's talking to the Qazi, he happened to mention to him that for every hair on the cow, you're going to have to spend 1,000 years in hell. So that may be a strategy for preaching to dissuade people, because if they're killing animals, especially the cow, then they won't be able to understand anything else that we're talking about. But our main thrust is to preach Krishna consciousness, not to simply end simple activities, because there's so many of them. There's so many things going wrong in Kali Yuga. So instead of trying to, just like we don't try to water each leaf and branch, we try to water the root. So the root causes forgetfulness of Krishna. So we end cow slaughter, illicit sex, meeting, gambling. One of our main ways of doing it is to go out and chant Hare Krishna. Distribute books, preach, distribute prasadam, give people a higher taste. And then automatically all these other things will go away. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.